This is Danny, Dave, and Moore.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Now, the opening drive.
Spring is most often a rumor here in Seattle, but it's right out there out your front door today. March Madness is this week. The Huskies are in the tournament for the first time in 8 years. The Seahawks, well, they've survived free agency so far, maybe even made a couple of additions, and man, it feels great out there today. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I almost stayed home. I called in sick.
Wait, well, you're supposed to get out and do stuff. It's supposed to be energizing. It's not supposed to make you
hibernate. Oh, I was going to sit in my backyard.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
These are the kind of days you can't call in sick, though.
No.
You just can't. Especially if
it's too obvious.
If it's a Monday, then you turn it into a three-day weekend. And, yeah, if it's 70 degrees, the best days to call in sick are when it's raining. Yeah. Or when you're actually really sick, like I was last week.
I don't know about that. Interesting. I
thought this would be an uplifting time to talk about winter's back being broken. Instead, we get a documentary about how to call in sick.
Have you ever called in sick one time when you weren't?
No.
No.
Oh, I did it at the PI a couple times.
Interesting.
Oh, yeah. You haven't done it here at the
radio
station?
No, I haven't done it here. Honestly, it sounds like, well, if you did it at the PI, you'd probably do it here too, but I haven't. But at the PI, I did it a couple times. Yeah,
just
it was over.
Just left the whole operation hanging.
Yeah, but I think there were some good subs at the time, and it was a really nice day for golf. I was over, where was I? I was over in Port Orchard, I think. And
as interesting as your day-to-day at 10-year-old calling in sick.
I don't know. Excuse. I just kind of went off on that tangent, and I'm sorry to disrupt the show that way.
Yeah, well, it is spring. It's fantastic out there, and the tournament's about to start. This is my favorite week of the year. And the fact that baseball opening day is mixed in with this is absolutely awesome. I'm pumped to see what happens this week in the tournament. I'm headed to Salt Lake City. I watched the first two rounds there. Got the Zags.
Who are you going to see?
Zags are going to be there.
Playing. Auburn's there.
Auburn is also there.
Played really well.
Syracuse. We're looking at a potential Auburn-Syracuse second-round matchup if both of those teams advance.
So are you going to be a potential heckler?
At Gonzaga?
See, because you're going to be rooting for a 16 seed. There's a play-in game, right? There's Fairleigh Dickinson and somebody.
I'm open for Fairleigh Dickinson, just because I think that'd be a cool team to root for. Like, I'm here to support Fairleigh Dickinson.
They seem
like
Prairie View?
Prairie View would be okay. I will automatically associate them with Southwest Washington, because there's a high school down there, Prairie High School. It's not Prairie View, but Prairie High School that's down
Prairie.
There.
Yeah,
right. It's too bad you didn't get the Huskies, but you got Auburn, you got Kansas.
Kansas
is
also
there in Salt Lake.
We got a good collection of teams that'll be there. It should be an absolute blast. And it is. I'm sorry, I misspoke. It's Kansas and Auburn that might have that second round matchup.
Well, and this is my second favorite sports week of the year. The first favorite is the Super Bowl, and actually college basketball I think is ahead of college football for me, but it's ruined somewhat.
What happened
this week?
Why?
We don't have a damn television in the studio.
Oh no!
I don't know if you guys know this, but
we're
this
going
is
back
a
to that
sports station. And during the day on Thursday and Friday, there will be games playing, and we won't know about them. Here's what I do: I push this talk back button into C. Raj. He has a television in there, and I ask him for updates because we don't have a TV in here.
Sisyphus had his rock. Dave has no television. That's how the things go.
You know why, Jim?
The burdens that we're supposed to
because
be.
Because we report on sports. We don't watch sports.
That's right, Dave. The news side, though, they have TVs over there on the FM side. Yeah.
Let's go ahead and try and start the whole show again. It's Danny, Dave, and Moore. We're here. It's a gorgeous Monday afternoon, and Russell Wilson was on Jimmy Fallon over the weekend, and it was fascinating what he had to say because he was human. He was not robotic. He wore a jacket with a lot of different zippers. There were a lot of different shirts underneath the jacket. It was an interesting appearance that he chose, but he chose about the best way possible to handle the question of the rumors about him playing in New York for the New York Giants.
There's a rumor that maybe you could be maybe signing with the New York Giants. I'm just saying, I just heard a rumor about
I'm not sure if the Seahawks... we are in New York, but I'm not sure if the Seahawks are going to let me get away.
Yeah, no.
I love Seattle, and Seattle's a special place, so... Yeah, you know, been on to one Super Bowl there, go to two Super Bowls, multiple playoff games and everything else. And
I know, but you're still young. You should go.
Are you bribing me to New York?
No, I'm just saying, dude, travel. Travel's good for the brain, dude. I think it'd be fun to have you here. You know, if you sign.
I did win a Super Bowl here.
Yeah.
So New York, New Jersey has been good.
I thought he handled it well. I mean, he wasn't robotic. He wasn't entirely boring there. You can tell Jimmy Kimmel loves him, or is that Fallon? Which one is he?
It's Fallon.
It's Fallon, yeah. They're both Jimmies. I thought he was fine. Did anybody have any problem with what he said there?
I didn't have a problem. I thought it was a little Machiavellian. I thought it was an effective way to shift the pressure onto the Seattle Seahawks. It's not up to me if I go play for the New York Giants. The Seahawks aren't going to let me get away.
Did you wonder what Machiavellian meant, too?
Yeah, I was wondering where that was going. But I don't want to get us off track and start complaining about the lack of television in the studio. But I like, you know what I wrote down? Remember the theme last year?
Help Russell.
Help Russell. You know what it is this year? Leave Russell alone. He's fine. I want to get T-shirts made. Leave Russell alone. He's fine.
Did he look a little heavy to you, though?
No.
A little bit?
I don't care if he's a little bit heavy. He's like 7 pounds away from being like in playing shape. And then you see on the Twitter, he's putting all of his workouts in. You know, he's got a dang, he's got a gym in his house. I'm sure that gym has a television so he can watch college basketball. I mean, he's fine. Leave him alone. Leave Russell alone. He didn't say anything wrong there. I thought he was plenty entertaining. He was going on there to be entertaining. He mentioned our own Jake Heaps.
Talked about him. Called him a guru.
Yeah. Talked about the passing academies that he apparently thought up in 11th grade. So this guy, as far as goal setting and everything, he's just the best. So, you know, it's just weird to me. And I don't know if it's because of his height or whatever, but he's been doubted. And even after putting in, there are people that complain regularly about Russell Wilson. And I'll say it again, at the end of the year, and what did they do last year? They helped Russell. They got Dwayne Brown, and that was, you know, midway through the 2017 season. But, you know, they've got him some time, and then they got him a running game. You know, 160 yards a game for, you know, they were number one by a long shot running the ball. The team that was closest was Baltimore, and that's because they have Lamar Jackson out there, and he's running the ball a ton. But, yeah, they helped him. And, you know, but I still hear lots of complaining about him. Maybe people don't like the way he runs his life off the field. You know what I go back to? 2015. Remember when he went on vacation down in Mexico during the bye week?
Oh, with the horse.
Yeah, there was a horse on the beach. It looked like the cover.
That's exactly what I think of, too.
Yeah.
That was when there was the weird picture of the horse.
Yeah, it's like he's on The Bachelor.
No, it was.
Something.
It looked like
a cover of a romance novel.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, and, you know, that was the thing that I got upset about, because I always felt I wasn't upset. I just thought, all right, that's kind of weird. And the reason why is during the season, I never wanted to taste anything that felt like the off season. There's like a certain amount of you commit yourself to misery for the season. It starts with double days, and it used to be really hard, and now it's not so hard, but you know, you can't think about anything else but football. And I thought, that's really weird that he did that. And he came back and didn't have a very good game against Arizona. And then, you know, and every time I think of that, I think of like Ciara in some flowing dress, and she's riding a horse, or Russell's on the horse with his, you know, just like, yeah, it looked like a romance novel. And
the waves are lapping.
Yeah.
In.
So he has the bad game against Arizona, and then he just goes on a tear. Just a historically great, I think he was 73% passing from inside the pocket. You know, there was some crazy stat with him and Doug Baldwin where I think he threw one incompletion to Doug Ball, something like that. So, I mean, it worked for him. He's fine. He can do that stuff, okay? Leave Russell alone. He's fine.
No, he is fine, but don't you, when you, so the whole time I watched the interview today, and it was 6 minutes, and Jimmy Fallon did a good job trying to get stuff out of him, but the only thing I thought was, I wish he was more like that when he's talking to the local media as when he's doing the national appearances, and it's a completely different guy. And well, I suppose, you know, leave Russell alone. Okay. Yeah. But that was the only thing. I wish he'd be just a little more fun when he's around the local media, too.
Maybe we're not asking good enough questions. Maybe we're lacking there. They always say, you know, the hard-charging journalists are in the East, right?
No, I think if
we're
you asked
a bunch of softball tossers
out
Moore here.
Says.
Yeah, but if you asked him Sierra-type questions during those local press conferences, I think he'd say, well, I just want to talk about football now.
He was asked about the upcoming contract extension. What could put him in line to be the highest paid player in the league. Here was what he said.
There's a possibility that you will be the highest paid quarterback in the history of the league. Yeah.
Well, that's a great potential of that. We'll see what happens.
Well, how does that Does that make you feel good? I mean, is that cool?
Well, you know, it's not. It's not gonna make me feel bad.
Yeah. But I mean, to think about, you know, Russell Wilson growing up, and I don't know.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, being a kid, African American kid, 5'11", coming from Richmond, Virginia. I went to a private school. Everybody said I wouldn't make it playing Division I A, and then getting to where I am now, and just finishing year 7, and you know, going into year 8, and I believe I have 10 to 15 more years left. You know, it's a blessing.
You know, I would say this: I don't want people to stop doubting him. That's what drives athletes. And we, you know, when we were down, and reflecting on my own career, you know, I felt like I was always underestimated. One of the things, I got to Denver, and they had this young, like, athletic linebacker, and he was really fast and everything. And I remember, you know, they put him ahead of me, and I thought they were going to cut me because, you know, I was more expensive than the young phenom player. And, you know, and so in practice, and he couldn't play. I mean, he didn't know. He had all the athletic ability in the world, but he didn't know how to play. And so in a practice one time, I ran past him and made a tackle in the backfield. And Jack Elway, who was working there, he's like, "Well, Dave, we didn't know you had that kind of speed and that you could do that." I'm like, "Really? You coached me in college. What the heck?" You know, so it put like a huge chip on my shoulder. Nobody was writing about me. A lot of the guys in Denver were like, "Oh, yeah, I remember you. Yeah, you played up in Seattle. You guys were no good, blah, blah, blah," whatever. And so it put a chip on my shoulder, and I ended up having my best year there. And that's because I probably had the biggest chip on my shoulder the entire season. And that's what athletes, that's what drives them. We heard that from a number of the young Mariners that we talked to a couple weeks ago.
What does Russell want? And that, because that's what I came away from this interview with Jimmy Fallon. That's what I wondered. What does Russell want? I like to poke fun because I think Russell's press conferences are strange, but it doesn't bother me at all. And I don't care what he wears. And I certainly don't think he's overweight. And that the idea, I've thought he prepares him. He puts as much money into his body and getting himself ready as any athlete I've ever been around. With the nutritionist he has, with the workouts he does. And he is always available. I give him the utmost credit. But I came away with the question of what does he want? Because for some guys, and we talked about this last week with Earl Thomas, I think for Earl, the salary was important. Getting a top-tier salary in this final contract was important to him. I wonder what is most important to Russell. I know that winning is, because it's not statistics for him. He's not someone that needs to throw for 5,000 yards in a season or needs to attempt an average of 35 passes. Winning is the most important thing to him. But beyond that, he mentioned that his favorite athlete ever is Derek Jeter. And Derek Jeter is kind of in that list of guys, along with Tom Brady's in there. Jordan is, additionally, of guys that became this cornerstone and associated with one team, even though Jordan finished his career with the Wizards. But I came away from this wondering, what is going to be most important to Russell? And I think we're going to see a little bit with this contract negotiation, because you could make an argument or point to, he has a chance, if he walks a certain way, he could change the way quarterbacks play the game economically. If he decided to push and be really hard-edged about getting to unrestricted free agency in the same way Kirk Cousins did, completely changed the game about the way quarterbacks get played.
Well, the only thing he could have answered that maybe a little bit better is just to say, yeah, I'm going to be the highest paid quarterback. Because is there any other big negotiations that are going on? I'm trying to think around the league. But, you know, you're going to be that until the next year.
Yes.
Or
they're talking about Mahomes next year.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be what? Supposedly it's a 5-year, $200 million deal is what's been thrown out there. And so, yeah, just by the nature of the salary cap going up and every year, you sign a contract and it looks cheap in 2 years if you're a good player. You know, same thing with Tyler Lockett. The other thing you mentioned about he puts workouts and stuff like that on, you know, Twitter and social media and everything. I've witnessed it, man. I remember in a preseason game one time, I got up early to get a workout down in L.A. And, you know, it was the second, maybe first or second preseason game where he wasn't going to play very much. And he was in there working out. He had I think somebody stretches him. The gal, I can't remember her name, but she's in there. There's somebody else. He's doing a workout. You know, he's just, I mean, that guy, he puts everything in. And so you see him at Mardi Gras or whatever Carnival he was at, and you see him on the beaches with the horse and all that stuff. He's throwing the football on the Great Wall of China. This guy's working his tail off in between. You just see those things. So, and it's, you know, the whole thing about him being heavy and everything is just ridiculous. The guy is so motivated. Do I need to say it again? Leave Russell alone. He's fine.
Well, you look at the Coors Light text line, 614, I think, sums it up. And Russell Wilson told us this a long time ago. 614 is saying, I think Russ wants to go down as the greatest to ever play quarterback in the NFL. He mentioned that early on. I think even as early as the second season he was here. And so, Danny, when you talk about what he wants, I think that would also signify that he's one of the greatest ever if he's making more money than anyone ever has.
I think those are two different things. And maybe being the greatest ever will also be the highest paid ever. And one of the reasons I'm interested in watching this negotiation is because I think that there's the normal path would be for him to work within the system and get whatever extension he comes up with that'll probably be in August that will make him the highest paid quarterback, like Dave said, for about a year. And it'll be passed by other guys. And a couple years down the road, if he's still playing well, he'll pass a contract within the context, within the framework of how quarterback contracts get done. The same way with Aaron Rodgers, the same way with Matt Ryan. When you're a great quarterback like that, you get a big deal every 3 or 4 years. Or he could choose to walk a path if he really wanted to push for as much money as you could earn and as much control as you could have. You would walk down a path where you're getting franchise tagged and you're able to push toward unrestricted free agency and get an even bigger deal. And there's nothing wrong with setting that as your priority, but I think that that would change what you end up getting out of it. So I'm most interested in watching to see, is this going to be a lot of offseason of posturing before ultimately an extension's agreed to that is pretty much pro forma for how these deals get done in today's NFL? Or are we going to see him really push to change in some ways some of the economic system of the NFL?
Do you see his agent as kind of a pit bull type?
Yes.
So I think that's a good sign. And, you know, I signed with an agent for that same reason, that, like, I wanted him to be the guy, to be the bad guy. I don't want any part of it. That's the feeling I get from Russell Wilson, that, you know, he's hired this guy that's going to, he's going to make it tough during negotiations when maybe it shouldn't be, you know, and that's the one thing. I mean, look, Schneider loves the players and, you know, they want to keep him here. He's not going anywhere. That'll be another T-shirt. Russell's not going anywhere.
Yeah,
where are you going?
Aren't you feeling more and more though, like he's probably going to go down that path you're talking about, the Kirk Cousins path? I don't know why I feel like that might be happening. Maybe something to do with his agent, the fact that he's only 30 years old, and if he does this for 2 more years, he's still going to be relatively in his prime.
Yeah, well, he sure has a good case to make, because the reason why you don't give somebody guaranteed money is because they might get hurt, and Russell has stood the test of time as far as. You know, I still can't get over how ridiculous, and I think he missed one play, the knee injury that he almost got in the San Francisco game. Same thing with Ndamukong Suh on his ankle, you know, running into J.J. Watt, Clay Matthews. I mean, this guy he's taken all kinds of shots. So, you know, he's got that going for him. He's got going for him that he's not selfish, as you said, Danny. He doesn't have to throw. You know, some of his best games are he's 19 for 26, throws for 190 yards, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. That's what a good byline, and he's fine with that. You don't see him complaining about it. So, you know, that part's checked. And then, you know, what he does when he does throw the ball, he takes advantage of it. Again, they threw it the least of anybody in the NFL, and he had the third least interceptions. He takes care of the ball.
What about all the
touchdowns
he was wearing during this interview? There was four different pieces of jewelry
that
were hanging from his neck.
A cross, number three.
There were zippers.
There was a dog tag.
Dog tag.
It's like 8 zippers on his jacket.
The jacket is fine, okay?
It must have been hot.
The necklaces are fine. Okay, I would have been hot, too.
Those TV lights.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like 4 layers. It was like he's finished watching Crazy Stupid Love and listened to Ryan Gosling's advice about having all these layers, and everything from here down was just sweat. He was just encased in a big envelope of
sweat. Leave Russell alone.
Thank you,
Jim. Did you hear Dave?
Yeah.
It's Danny David Moore. Time to take two.
Take two. Jordy Nelson is reportedly visiting the Seahawks, and John Schneider knows him well.
Yes, he does, and he loves Jordy Nelson. In fact, there was once a time where John Schneider was standing next to someone who was running down and cursing the Seahawks' inability to find wide receivers. And he said, Like, why can't we get somebody who found a wide receiver like Jordy Nelson? Why can't we draft someone like that guy? Schneider pointed out to him, he's like, I did. Mm-hmm. I'd love to see Jordy Nelson here.
Well, and, who's complaining about that? You got Doug Baldwin here.
Well, yeah.
You didn't draft him.
Yeah, but there's people who like to complain. We don't get any playmakers. Well, they're out there.
That's the other thing people were saying. Well, you already got slot guy and everything. I'm like, well, sometimes you go two by two. There's two slot guys. If he's good enough and he catches the ball, this whole thing about number one receiver, number two receiver, like, just throw the ball to the open guy. I don't care what number he is.
Yeah, there's a new piece of shorthand that's being used by some of the stats nerds where you call him WR1.
Oh, boy.
He's a WR1.
Mm-hmm.
You got a good WR1.
It's like Tyler Lockett.
Yeah, he's showing he might be a WR1.
So what is Doug Baldwin a WR2?
Yeah.
Because I'd say he's
slot
the best
specialist.
In the league. He is the best in the league. Doug Baldwin is.
Well, I was wondering how they were going to handle it if Nelson did sign, being having two slot receivers. But according to the internet, they're saying 2/3 of the plays last year he was split out. So
Jordy Nelson was?
Yeah, Jordy Nelson was with the Raiders. So I love it. 34 years old in May. And I just think it's cool that he's from Riley, Kansas, population 939.
And he also went to Utah.
Works on the farm in the offseason.
He also went to Utah State as well, right?
Did he?
No, he's
Kansas State.
Kansas State. I've got Utah State on the brain because that's who the Huskies are playing.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys are going to go. Well, never mind.
Over to baseball, since we will see opening day happen in Japan, Ichiro will get the start for the Mariners.
Ichi. Can you believe that? You see him running out into right field, and everybody has their phone out. I think there was two people in the crowd shot I saw that didn't have. And you look at him, that's the first time I looked at him and go, wow, he's looking old.
Yeah.
Until he made that against the wall catch, and until, how about the throw to third base to Ryan Healy?
It made me think that Ichiro, similar to how he homered when he was with the Marlins here at Safeco when we thought it was going to be his last time in Seattle, Ichiro, he has the ability to make incredible plays when the spotlight shines on him. I can't wait for him to homer in one of these games over in Japan and everybody to go nuts. I'm going to take it and stick it in Jim's face.
What are you talking about?
He's going to clobber the ball.
Is it 2003?
No.
Did I just, like wake up in a time warp or something?
Ichiro has shown the ability to rise to the moment, Jim.
It's Rip Van Moore.
I know you're right about that because I remember seeing that. I was at the game when he hit that home run, but I don't get it. I don't get it. I know we're going to talk about it later, but the guy's 2-for-31. This spring.
Spring
training. So let's just trot him out there anyway. And
heck yeah.
Okay.
Let's go.
All right. I know most people are in favor of it. I'm not, but oh well.
Would you prefer that they just cut him right now? They get over to Japan. They're like, second thought, ixnay on the Ichiro A.
Like, okay, so I think Divish was saying he's got some sources saying it's only going to be two games. Okay, so we know that. But is he still going to be wearing his uniform and batting gloves and coming out in the victory celebration line and taking BP, and I mean, when does it end?
I don't know. Aren't you worried that when it does end, he might not be equipped to go on? You heartless man.
I know I'm heartless, but let's just, service says it's a results-oriented business, but it's really not. It's not. He's lying to us.
You ready to dance? The Huskies are dancing. We're going to talk about their return to the NCAA tournament next.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
it's Danny, Dave, and Moore, streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
First time since 2011, the Huskies are back in the big dance, and here's what I thought of this morning. 2 years ago, a friend of mine named Dave and a couple other friends ran into Jen Cohen in a bar in Colorado. At Boulder, before the Huskies played the Buffaloes. Was that on a Friday night? So the night before that, they ran in, and it was Mike Hopkins' first year. He had not coached a game yet. And my friend Dave informed Jen Cohen that she was doing a fantastic job as athletic director, but shouldn't have fired Lorenzo Romar. To which Jen Cohen responded, two wins in the Pac-12 get you fired, dude.
That's the way she said it?
That was how it was relayed to me. So It's not a direct quote. That was how it was summarized to me. And at that point, my friend Dave responded that you had the number one recruiting class in the country coming in, and you're not going to win two games next season. And I don't think he was alone in that sentiment that what was going to happen that season in Hopkins' first season was going to be a huge step back, similar to what happened when Bob Bender had his first year in 1993. And I think they won five total games that year, three in the Pac-10. Then it was the Pac-10. Jen Cohen made a decision that wasn't a slam dunk to get rid of Lorenzo Romar, given the power of the recruiting class that was coming in there. And what she's gotten and went out and hired is somebody who has gotten the Huskies back into the tournament before he's even started landing the huge recruits that are on their way. He hasn't had the big recruiting coup yet. That's next year with Isaiah Stewart and the kid that transferred from Kentucky who will be eligible, Quade Green. What she did, she deserves a huge amount of credit for having the guts to hire a guy she could have eminently justified giving him another year. I thought it was time for Lorenzo to go, and I loved Lorenzo Romar as a coach, and in fact, previously had thought he should never be fired from this job. But she made a decision, and with Washington back in the tournament, she deserves a ton of credit for making the call and then the guy she went and got in Mike Hopkins.
Yeah, you know, Hopkins must blow people away in interviews, you know, and I'm sure when she interviewed him, it was impressive. But I felt the same way. I've met Lorenzo Romar, you know, in public, and I just am incredibly impressed by him. He's just a really nice guy, and, you know, and I thought he did a decent job, and I liked how he treated his players and everything, but it was kind of a big move letting him go. Like you said, there was probably 55% people thought that he should have stayed, you know, a little bit more, and it wasn't, maybe it should have been more obvious, but yeah, with Hopkins, and who knew that he was this great of a recruiter too? I mean, pulling this kid out of what, Washington, D.C.?
It's that
Isaiah Stewart, or wherever he's from?
Upstate New York is where he's from.
Okay, but he's taken trips to Kentucky, Duke, and he chose Washington, so yeah, good for him. So it was kind of a, I guess, bold move by her. But I bet you if you asked her and you were sitting in on that meeting, you know, it's kind of like the same thing with Sean McVay with the Rams. It's you get in front of a guy like that that really knows exactly where he's going and what he's doing, and I think it can be very impressive.
Yeah, I don't think it was a bold move on Jen Cohen's part. I have a lot of respect for her doing what she did, and it seemed pretty obvious to me that this whole business of what was going on at Nathan Hale. Yeah, can I bring that up one more time? So if I'm Jen Cohen, I'm sitting there thinking, well, okay. And then all these, you know,
you didn't like what was happening at Nathan Hale?
No, I didn't. And I just lost my pen throwing it as a result of that. You know, and everybody talks about Lorenzo Romar and his integrity.
He's
and
got a lot of integrity.
Man of integrity. No, he does not.
Yeah, he certainly
does. He does not.
He's the nicest
he
guy.
He did. Past tense integrity with Lorenzo Romar. He lost me when he hired that. So the godfather of Michael Porter Jr., who just happened to be the best player in the country.
Wait, if you're going to...
That was so bogus, Danny.
If you're going to start throwing aspersions, like, at least get it right. Lorenzo's the godfather of the kid. They flat out hired his dad.
Okay, whatever. It was just hanky-panky all the way around.
There's nothing hanky-panky.
You know what I hated?
Out in front of everybody. We're going to hire his dad so he'll come to school.
That's what I hated the most about it. It's like, hey, you think we're this stupid that we don't see what's going on? Like, I don't know what's going on. Hey, Brandon Roy suddenly is the coach at Nathan Hale. You think Brandon Roy would have been coach at Nathan Hale if they just had some, you know, kids that were coming up from the Nathan Hale farm system? No.
You think Nathan Hale has a farm system?
But Jen Cohen gets a lot of credit because she hired the right guy. She hit a home run. She hit a home run like Haniger hit yesterday there in Tokyo. I mean, she just, with Mike Hopkins, I love what you guys are doing over there. It makes me mad. It really makes me mad because of what we're doing over in Pullman. Hopefully Pat Chun will hit a home run higher just like Jen Cohen did. But right now, I thought she made the right move, not only firing Lorenzo Romar, and then she went out and got the right guy, too. I mean, you guys are set for years to come.
We should be. Washington certainly should be. They're limping into the tourney, though. Watching them get drubbed by Oregon was painful.
I referred to that earlier. I'm kind of mad at the Huskies. You know, it just, wow. The way they played down the stretch, and, you know, what did they score, 47 points against the Oregon the first time?
Yes. It was 44 the first time.
Yeah.
44 the first time.
Or not the first time, but the most recent.
And then this one, they scored 47.
Yeah. So, man, I mean, I just feel like they're so reliant on if you get good David Crisp, you know, and it's just too – it's too spotty as far as
their offense certainly is not consistent at all. And Noah Dickerson, as good as he's been, there are times, and Oregon is a terrible matchup for him because of the shot blockers, because of Wooten down there. It's just, it's really tough for him. They're limping in. There's no doubt about that. What they've lost four of their last seven, and the games that they've won have been excruciatingly close. They can't close things out anymore.
Well, and this is one of the matchups. I was watching the selection show yesterday, and I think Seth Greenberg was all over Utah State on this one. And a lot of it had to do with the way the Huskies limped in, but also just Utah State is a really good passing team. They got this kid, Sam Merrill, 21 points a game, and he seemed to think it was a bad matchup for the Huskies.
I'm pumped about the fact that they limped in, because now I think they're due. They're going to get in and they're going to get hot. Two games in 3 days, and they're going to advance to the Sweet 16. That's what's going to happen. David Crisp is going to shoot 66% from three over the next week, and absolutely, they're going to beat Utah State in a squeaker, and then they're going to thump North Carolina.
That's ridiculous.
That's what they're going to do. Their zone defense is going to come in. UNC is just not going to be prepared to handle the length that they have at the top of the zone with Matisse Thybulle. The Huskies are going to get hot, and they're going to get to the Sweet 16.
You know what I hope happens, Danny? I hope that that actually comes true, but that the game is on during our show. Because well, then you couldn't watch it.
You haven't looked at the start time.
The game
that's
is
exactly
on during our show.
What's going to happen.
3:50 on Friday.
3:45 tip.
Oh, I'm talking about the North Carolina game. Oh, that would be over the weekend.
That's
right?
On the weekend. I'll be able to watch.
Well, never
that
mind. I can dream anyway. All right, they're going to thump Utah State.
They're going to squeak by Utah State. It's going to be a nail biter, and then they're going to pull off the first big upset. The only one seed that's going to go down in the first two rounds is going to be UNC, and they're going to take it on the chin from the Huskies.
I know you don't really believe that.
I do 100%.
All right, you got two things.
I'm speaking it into existence.
You got two things going for you. One is that maybe teams won't be used to that zone, and you can't simulate Thybulle in practice.
That's exactly right.
So that's number one. That'll really help them. I don't think Utah State will be used to that. You know, as good as they shoot, I mean, Thybulle will be all over the place, and so that gives you a chance. The other thing is, everyone is doubting Washington now.
That's exactly
Washington
right.
has gone from, man, they were 13 and 0, they were running away from the conference, and boy, who's going to beat Washington? And now it's like, man, I don't think Washington can win a game. They're going to be one and done, and everyone's doubting them, chip on the shoulder, all that kind of stuff, and so that should help them.
You just
there
made my
in
case
Columbus.
For me. Thank you very much, Jimmy. He has explained why the Huskies are going to beat the Tar Heels. He has explained the rationale perfectly. It's absolutely fantastic.
I still like Utah State given the 2.5. Though,
yeah, I do too, and I think it's pathetic that you have sunk into the level of going Jim Moore, they're due.
That is pretty low.
That is low.
That's really low.
They've got nothing to lose. They're playing with house money. This is more Jim Moore rationale, right? They're going to come in there and nobody's expecting it.
You lose to Utah State, and I think all of a sudden you go from thinking, man, that was a really good season we had, to, oh boy, it was really good for, what, through the end of January, and then not so much at the end.
Incorrect. They have made the NCAA tournament in a year that there was no reason to expect them to get that far. They won the Pac-12 during the regular season in a year where you looked at it and you thought, hey, be competitive in the conference. It's absolutely a success. To get to the tournament in his second season, it's close to a home run, and it's going to be a grand slam when they upset North Carolina in the second round.
Okay, Danny. I'll be watching.
It's Danny Davenport. We got tickets to the Mariners. We're going to give those away next.
This is Danny Davenport.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle Sports app.
It is Danny Davenport. We got baseball this week. Anybody going to stay up? Anybody going to stay up? Because it's...
I thought about it.
Is it Wednesday morning?
Oh, it's Wednesday morning.
So it's Tuesday night, here. Wednesday morning. Oh,
yeah,
no
I'm
kidding.
Obligated to be up for those. Both of them. I'll be on postgame Thursday.
Is anybody going to be talking to see... Because... Will you take calls?
At that hour of the day, whew, that's going to be an interesting crowd.
You're actually going to be okay because the game starts at 2:30.
Yeah.
So the game's going to end 5:30, 6 o'clock.
Yes.
You're going to have some morning commuters. You'll have normal humans.
That's true.
At that point.
There'll be dedicated listeners, too.
Exactly. It's not like going to the grocery store at 1 a.m. You see some real sketchy folks at that time.
I worked at one point at ESPN, my first job out of college. I worked the overnight shift where my shift started at 5 p.m. and I was done at 2 to 3 a.m. And you see a whole different slice of life when that's your waking hours. You go to a 24-hour grocery store at 4:30 in the morning, you are seeing an interesting slice of life there, my friends.
I'll bet.
Like, what are you doing buying that?
Yeah, but you
this
know,
guy's
like,
got peanut butter.
C-Rodge is going to be fielding some calls from people that were very dedicated to Mariner baseball. So they'll be good callers. Maybe not plentiful, but high quality.
You guys going to watch it live?
I'm thinking about watching the Wednesday, because Wednesday night, Thursday morning, because I'm flying to Utah. I'm probably going to get up Wednesday morning.
I thought about going to bed at 10 and set my alarm for like 2:30. And then watching the game and then going back to sleep for a couple more hours.
We've got to have a word for that, because the young man's approach would be to stay up late. The old man's approach would be to go to bed early.
That's called wisdom.
Well, when was your last all-nighter? Mine was in Pullman, so that was a long time ago.
I stayed up all night a couple times covering the Seahawks, where I had an early enough flight and it had been a night game, and I was like, it's just not worth it. But I wouldn't be able to do it for most anything that it was not absolutely employment required. I don't think I've got the guts or the stamina to do it anymore. I just lack the willpower.
The older you get, it just, like, even the Super Bowl 48, I think that party went till like 4:30, and I had to get up at 6:30, I think, to leave to catch the bus. I went and caught a couple hours.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, yeah, in your younger days, you just... you power right through that.
All right. Well, here's what it is we've got a couple of tickets in 2 weeks, baseball back at T-Mobile Park to celebrate. Right now, the first caller at 206-421-3776 going to get two tickets. It's the March 30th Mariners game. The Mariners are hosting the Boston Red Sox. Great seats for the Boston series remain at mariners.com. First caller right now, 206-421-3776. And Scott Servais has told the Mariner reporters that are there in Japan that Ichiro is going to be in the starting lineup that Wednesday morning game. And the expectation is he is going to play in these two games that are over there at a point when the roster is larger than it normally would be. I have no problem with this, but I wouldn't have minded if Felix had started the regular season opener either. It wasn't that big a deal to me. Watching Ichiro make the throw in today's game, the game that was played this morning, where just in front of the warning track, he threw no hops off of a fly ball to keep the runner at second to not test his arm. I've loved Ichiro as a player. He's been one of my favorite Mariners to watch. In fact, I would say he's probably my second favorite all-time Mariner behind Griffey. I'll enjoy watching him get to conclude his career, in my mind, should conclude his career here with these two games in Japan.
Well, I think it comes off as a bit of a sideshow because what was he in spring, Jim? 2-for-25, 2-for-23.
2-for-25 and then 0-for-3 in each of the two exhibition games there in Tokyo.
But here's the difference between, because I think I wouldn't be happy if they decided to start Felix. To me, I think that would be just acquiescing to him so he can, you know, continue his streak or whatever. Whereas with the one thing, the difference is between the two, Ichiro, when you talk to the other players and you talk to Servais, the amount of wisdom that he imparts on his teammates and how much they respect him and everything, I just think that it's at a point where, you know, we always talk about the sacrifice, like the guy's got a bunch of baggage, but he's a really good player. If it's not, you know, the right amount, then he's not going to be here. You know, I don't think that they would start Ichiro if he wasn't so valuable. I think that's a fair trade for them, that we're going to keep him. We know that he's not the best option in right field, but he is for 2 years now just been awesome with all the rest of the players. And every player we talk to, they always say, they talk about going and sitting with Ichiro and talking to him, and he communicates really well. I think one of the reasons why we don't end up favoring him that much is you never hear from him. You know, it's kind of like Jimmy Graham, you know, with the Seahawks. You just never hear from Ichiro, but it sounds like you have a hard time believing that he's actually that communicative with his teammates, where, you know, when you talk to them, man, they just like they sit next to him and soak up all the knowledge they possibly can.
Well, he's a private guy, and that's fine. But, and Dave, you bring up a good point with how important he is to those young players there in the clubhouse and the influence he has on them. It's just, I don't know what other organization does something like this, though, because the last time that he played for the Mariners, I think it was last May. And so then, again, we saw him, you know, and he was there taking batting practice, doing different things. I just think the whole thing's weird. And, you know, maybe I should be more into the ceremonial part of it, going back to Japan where it all started and how much they love him there. And I have an appreciation for that. But there's a bigger part of me that's just thinking, come on, guys. You know, this is – you're trying to change the perception of your team, I think, while you're doing this step back season and building for the future. And, you know, having Ichiro just kind of be a hanger on and going over there and playing two ceremonial games, I guess it doesn't really matter. But Felix, the same thing. And it's just, yeah, it's just a hard one for me.
I remember so fondly Ichiro's, especially his first season, and the surprise that that was. And that's such a, it's a great memory for me. It's one of my favorite sports memories is the 2001 season that this guy, who nobody knew what to expect, you'd never had an everyday position player from Japan come and play in the major leagues. And throughout spring training, and there was one point Lou Piniella was concerned because all he was doing was grounding out to short. And we learned later that he was just working on his timing, that it wasn't spring training was not when he was showing how he planned to approach opposing hitters, that he was playing it coy a little bit. He didn't want pitchers to learn that much about him. And the year he had there, I'm looking forward to celebrating who he was for this franchise for these two games. And then I'm looking forward to turning the page. And in that way, if it had been Felix there, I would have said, well, it doesn't really matter. This way, this does matter. This does matter to honor his contribution, the fact that he was a pioneer in the game of baseball, how important he is to Japan, the connection with Japan that remains. We're going to see Yusei Kikuchi pitch in the second game. He's going to start the second game for the Mariners, and he's someone who could have a huge impact on the future of this franchise. I'm looking forward to the ceremonial elements of it, and then I'm looking forward to that chapter being over.
Just a quick question. I know we need to go to break, but do you think that when he was here in Seattle that he was a team player?
No.
Okay, so that's part of it with me, too, is like, okay, if you weren't a team player when you were here during the prime of your career, I don't think we need to make concessions for you.
It's a fair point. I would say now he is very much a resource for the team. It's Danny Davenport. There's a lot to pick through there. We'll talk more about Ichiro, but up next, we got the professor, Jordy Nelson, going to be a Seahawk.